sunspots, solar storms, hurricanes, abortion, and gaslighting. How do all these connect? Well, I'll talk about that today on Principles and Policies. Hi, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And you may think this is kind of a, that was kind of a diverse opening. How do all those things connect up? Well, it's important to realize we're going to be talking a lot about logical fallacies and bad argumentation and things that, because, you know, last week we talked about information being given to us in a form that feels like we're drinking from a fire hose. And because of that, we become more and more and more likely to sort of shorthand what it is, the information that we're taking in. In other words, we speed read and we don't necessarily go after all the details. And because we don't go after the details, or sometimes things are outside of our knowledge sphere, like many of you may not have a great deal of knowledge of the history of hurricanes or the history of sunspots, the history of solar storms, what they do, what can happen from them. People may be able to just feed you, treat you like a mushroom. Now, what is that really? You may have heard that phrase before. You may know what it means. You may not. Treating you like a mushroom means you're kept in the dark and you are fed fertilizer in the form of animal droppings. Generally, the way the phraseology is that it involves a bull. So essentially kept in the dark and fed bull droppings. You can discern from that what the phrase is, but that's what it means. It means people are essentially giving you enough information to make a decision on something or understand something in terms of the terms that they are laying out. How can they do this? They know that you may not have specialty knowledge in one place or another. You may have enough knowledge to put things together in the narrative they're trying to present, but you don't have time to go out and do the searching to look up things to see if what you're being told is true or not. You're assuming that they're true. Why? You couldn't put it on TV. You couldn't put it on the internet if it wasn't true. That's the old joke about there was an ad for I forget what the product was. It was a very pretty girl, and she's walking down the street and having a conversation with somebody. And they go back and forth, and he goes, well, how do you know that's true? And she goes, well, I saw it on the internet. Well, right, if it's on the internet, it has to be true. No, it doesn't. Now, the way that ad ended up, it was kind of funny. This guy walks around the corner. It's very short, not very attractive man at all. This beautiful girl and this ugly little man walk off, and he says, well, where did you meet him? Well, he's a French model. Where did you meet him? On the internet. Well, that's the joke. I mean, this woman is susceptible to anything that's told to her by someone in authority or as perceived as someone who is connected to someone who's in authority. That's one of the problems that we have. Now, you know, biblically, we're told to respect authority, right? I mean, it is a biblical principle. But what do you do when the authority or authorities don't respect you? That's the real question. When the authorities are telling you things and feeding you stuff that isn't true, can you continue to respect them? You have to keep in mind that they've got the job because God decided they were to be in the job. But what was God's purpose in giving them the job? The real purpose of giving someone in authority is because they're supposed to not abuse it, but use it for your good. Remember Romans 13. What's the purpose of the civil magistrate? It's to punish evil and reward good, and he is a minister. The civil magistrate is a minister for your good. And I've asked many, many times, I will continue to ask. You can point to Romans 13 and say, we always have to obey and believe and respect. But the fact is, we don't always have to obey when the civil magistrate is outside of his jurisdiction. We don't have to believe when we're lied to repeatedly, and we don't have to respect when someone has proven that they're not worthy of holding the job. And folks, we just came off a pandemic. COVID-19. We came off a pandemic in which we were lied to and 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 continue to be lied to. I just saw an ad where it's an advertisement and they're trying to push a specific agenda, but the mom and dad and the father says, hey, should I make arrangements to get the boys their flu shots, all the flu shots, including the COVID shot? And the mom says, oh, I've already done it. I've made that appointment online. And, it's an ad for a pharmacy. Well, the first thing I'd say is, okay, if you decide to get your child a COVID shot at this point, okay, have you actually been paying attention? Now, one of the reasons they're running these ads is because nobody is taking that shot anymore. There are a few people who had however many boosters were up to, 5 or 6 or whatever the number is. They've had them all. But, here's the problem. There are reasons that may make you think twice, hopefully, think twice about taking any more mRNA shots. Now, why is that different? Remember that the COVID-19 vaccine, despite, and this is part of the gaslighting I was talking about, despite what you're told, mRNA vaccines like the COVID shot are not vaccines. We call them vaccine as a shorthand, but they're not. Vaccines contain live or live and attenuated or dead viruses. That's how you make a true vaccine, because what the dead or attenuated viruses, and by attenuated, I mean, usually what you'll find is a lot of people are allergic to a lot of vaccines for things like viruses. The reason that that's the case is because the organism, the virus is called attenuated. That is, it's reduced in viability and strength by running it through a secondary organism. By that, I mean, they'll run it through a chicken first, and the chicken lays eggs, and from the eggs they culture these viruses, which are now nowhere near as powerful as they were when they were out in free state in the air, being transmitted by contact and that kind of thing. They've run through another organism, a chicken in this case, which changes it to the point where you can get the immunity. Your body sees the protein and the material of the virus, but it no longer has the ability to infect you, because your body builds immunity from seeing those building blocks. Your body builds immunity by putting up both specific and non-specific immunity, and you build both with an attenuated virus. With a killed virus, what you do is you essentially kill the virus, and what's left is the viral material, and you inject that, and the body builds immunity to the virus itself. I was telling people the other day, I'm old enough, I'm 67, I've had both the Salk and the Sabin polio vaccine. So I'm not anti-vaccine. I think the polio vaccine, saved hundreds of thousands of lives, perhaps more worldwide, perhaps millions, and a heartache of a lot of people. You know, people, when I was a kid, you could go to the hospital and there were wards where there were people in iron lungs. What were they? They were polio survivors, but they couldn't breathe on their own. They're paralyzed from the neck down, from the polio, and they're in these machines, and they live in them. Now, does that mean they couldn't do anything? No, a lot of people learned how to do all kinds of things. People learned how to paint by holding paintbrushes in their mouths, and they could dictate letters, and they could dictate some. I think somebody dictated a book from an iron lung. Nonetheless, what those vaccines did was give you immunity to polio. And when you hear about polio out, you know, when I was young, I lived in Indianapolis for about a year and a half. And when I was there, there was an outbreak of polio. I think two people got polio. Well, it turns out neither one of them had been vaccinated. They were just the right age where they had never taken either vaccine and got polio. So that did happen from time to time. Now, what was I getting at? Well, two different kinds of vaccine. And Salk got a lot of flack over his vaccine, because what was he using? People were worried that he was going to inject people with these viruses. Well, what he did was he killed the virus. How did he do it? The simplest way possible. He boiled them. I'm being simplistic, but they were boiled to kill them, because viruses are very susceptible to temperature change and that kind of thing. Now, the Sabin vaccine was an attenuated virus. And some of you who are old enough may remember they used to give it to you like in a sugar cube or as a liquid. I can remember when my dad was a pharmacist, and they ran some kind of a free clinic. I was quite young. I still remember, in a community center in kind of a depressed area. And they came in, and because people had given money for that purpose, they gave everybody the Sabin vaccine. That was an attenuated virus vaccine. So all this stuff about mRNA is a completely different. It's not even close to anything like that. What they were doing was giving you mRNA, messenger RNA. What does that mean? Messenger RNA is part of the cell replication mechanism. And they were giving you mRNA supposedly from the virus. They isolated the protein spikes and gave you mRNA. So literally what happened was, now we were told, if you remember this, after the mRNA injection, the stuff dissipated and nothing bad ever happened. Well, that's became obviously not true. mRNA was taken up by cells in your body, and it produced these spike proteins. It didn't reproduce the virus. It reproduced the spike protein, which then went around in people's bodies and deposited in all kinds of places in some cases. Now, there are people who never took the shot, who ended up with these spike proteins in their system. Where did they pick them up from? People shedded them who had had the shot. What does that mean? Shedding. It comes through mucus. It comes through saliva. It comes through all kinds of places, the same places that viruses very often come from. And what it did was people became machines to turn out the spike protein. What was the purpose of trying to get the spike protein in there? To get the body to build antibodies to the spike protein. Okay, a noble cause, but forgetting. Now, this is part of that gaslighting thing. This is part of you being told this. Remember, they're still pushing this narrative. And nobody has gone back and taken a look at when mRNA first was being worked on as a treatment. It was being worked on as an alternative treatment to cancer. mRNA, it was a part of when immune therapy was part of the big push for cancer treatment. This was back in the 80s. mRNA was tried, and it was withdrawn. The test treatments, the clinical treatments were stopped. Why? Because patients were dying. They were actually getting cancer worse than they'd had it before. They had people dying of some of the same things that we're seeing now. People in the clinical trial were heart disease and organ failure and all kinds of things like this. Why? Because mRNA tends to, when it's given in those kinds of doses, it tends to hijack your cell replication mechanisms and create itself. Which is why you're seeing people in their teens and early 20s, athletes and things, some who are susceptible to this. Not everybody is, but some are. A large number are. This is why there are large amounts of what are called excess deaths, more than normal from these vaccines. And yes, I know I'm gonna hear about this, and you're gonna get the disclaimer at the end of the show on WLRY, which is fine. I mean, I would too if I owned the radio station, and I'd put that disclaimer on. But these are facts. I have a degree in biochemistry, so I know something about this, and I remember reading studies in the 80s while I was in school on mRNA. Everybody said it looked like a wonderful breakthrough, and it turned out, well, what did they do? They had this technology they developed for these cancer treatments that they couldn't use anymore because they were actually killing patients. So they put it in their back pocket, and they said, we might be able to use this for something else someday. And what do you know? All of a sudden, we've got this laboratory-produced virus. And yes, it came out of a laboratory. It may have come originally from a natural source. Nobody really understands virus, where viruses come from. Because I had somebody say, well, maybe we can kill this virus. You can't kill a virus. A virus isn't alive, so you can't kill it. It's a piece of DNA or RNA, and it derives usually from some. Your body has ways of doing repair on DNA, so it sometimes bits and pieces of DNA or RNA get built that are wrong. So the body goes through and snips them. It snips them out. And reproduce, you know, fixes the problem that's made. Well, what happens with that virus, that little snippet of virus? It's not just people, it's animals and that kind of thing. That's why, for instance, this is called the bird flu. It started as an avian flu, COVID-19. But then that got taken into a lab to do quote unquote enhancement of function research. What is enhancement of function research? Well, they make the viruses stronger. And why? The only real reason, supposedly it's for, so they can do research into how to kill if it comes out stronger. Nonsense. It's weapons research. The only reason for enhancement of function is weapons research. And this is part of that gaslighting, folks. You're told all kinds of stories. Why did we do this? Why was it done in China? Because there wasn't any oversight from over here. Because there are numerous oversight agencies that simply would not allow. I mean, I'm not going to kid you that enhancement of function research doesn't go on here. It does. But it was done in China to keep it as far away from prying eyes as possible. And what happened? It got out of the lab. And it started spreading. And as it started spreading, we had a weapons-grade virus. Now, one of the reasons we were in a panic, what did we get sold at the beginning of the pandemic? We got sold the idea that this was going to be worse than Ebola. Huge percentages of people who got it were going to die. We were going to have corpses in the streets. We were going to have to burn the bodies. Blah, 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 blah. So, you know, we needed to close all these businesses, close churches, close libraries, close any place where people can gather socially. That's what the big panic was. Now, it became obvious within a few weeks of the panic starting that the stories were just simply not true. Who died in this pandemic? People who were already immune compromised. And I'm not going to kid you that it's no big deal. It is a big deal. One of my best friends, a lovely man, a fellow elder at Providence Presbyterian Church, a man who I love and respect, and I would consider a mentor, died in this thing. He was a multiple time cancer survivor, Vietnam vet, sprayed with Agent Orange, which left him with recurring skin cancers, and he had a compromised immune system, and he went in, and the treatment, by the way, the treatment recommended by the CDC and the NIH, the National Institute of Health, killed thousands of people. It killed them outright. They died as a direct result of the treatment of pump them full of remdesivir, which has severe, severe side effects, and then put them on a respirator, which exacerbated those, made them worse, made those side effects much, much worse. And virtually everybody who went on remdesivir and a respirator died. A lot of people who refused the treatment got it hard, but lived. I think something like 89% of people who went on that CDC, NIH suggested protocol died. And they died horribly. My poor friend Tom laid in that place begging us to take him home. At that point, we couldn't take him home. We could have got him to the lobby and he probably would have died. It was too late. He begged us to get him ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. We tried and no go. It was a no-go. So this is what gaslighting does. This is what happens when scientists who really don't understand what they're doing, authorities who don't really, they want you to believe in them. They want you to respect them. They want you to obey them. And they prove that they're not really worthy of obedience. They're not worthy of respect. And they're certainly not worthy of our faith in them. And that's the bottom line. They don't like this. They like being godlike. And that is essentially, if you look at Romans 13, basically what we believe, not just Romans 13, 1 Peter as well. These people have the job because God appointed them to it. Does that mean that everybody who's in the job is necessarily good? The answer is no. Sometimes God gives us bad leadership because we deserve it. But he also allows us the judgment to look and see and discern if these people who are basically representing God to us and are supposed to be representing us to God. In other words, they're a minister. They're a servant. A minister is a servant under authority. That's what Romans 13 says. He's a servant under authority. What authority? God's authority. Therefore, he's a representative of God. What if he doesn't believe in God? Or what if he thinks that he laughs at God? Well, God has put him in that place, perhaps for any number of reasons, for us to recognize that he's not truly a servant of God, serving under God's authority, or, and it's not just whoever. We have to understand that sometimes God gives us this in judgment. And in this case, we have ministers of all different types who are telling us all kinds of things that are absolute nonsense. They do not deserve our faith. They do not deserve our obedience. They do not deserve our respect. And yet we are told that we have to respect them. And that's true, but we have to recognize that they have jurisdictions. On this program before, I did 3 or 4 weeks on the basis of government. And what is the basis of government? God works in jurisdictions. there are places. It's if you're familiar at all with Abraham Kuyper, he called it sphere sovereignty. In my home, I am the chief magistrate in my home. Okay? I believe in, I'll be right up front, I believe in patriarchal leadership. I'm the dad. I'm supposed to be in charge, but that means that I'm supposed to be in charge while I minister to my wife and my kids. My kids don't live at home anymore. They have their own jurisdictions at this point. Do I have any jurisdiction anymore over my daughters? No, I don't. They're all under the jurisdiction of their husbands. And my grandkids, when they're here, and the we're babysitting. Yes, we have been given temporary jurisdiction over our grandchildren, and I can discipline my grandchildren even when my children are here, and they're grateful for it because Grandpa gets the black eye instead of Mom and Dad. But no, they step in. We support one another. My wife and I are she is my helpmeet, biblically speaking. I need her. I need her advice. I need her. We've been discussing things today about what to do about certain things around the house. And, while I look for a job, which I am doing, while I do that, my wife and I are, we operate as a team. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Your wife is your most important advisor, aside from God and your relationship with Christ. Your wife is your most important advisor. And she supplies things. If you married correctly, she supplies things to you that you don't have. You might run off and do something, that you think, and your wife will say, hold on, let's think about this. I've had this happen many, many times. Okay. Now, let's go back to where we were about servanthood and sphere sovereignty and jurisdiction. When someone from the state or the federal government comes in and says, for instance, like happened in 2020, you have to close your church. Does the state have jurisdiction over your church? And the answer is they do not. One of the reasons that churches don't pay things like property taxes is because we are actually part of an entirely separate kingdom. Now, there are people that will disagree with me, and that's fine. We are under the jurisdiction of the kingdom of heaven. So we are not tax immune. We are not tax exempt. We are tax immune. Why? Because the church belongs to Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is the king. Federal facilities don't have to pay taxes in inside states. If you got a fort, they don't have to pay property tax. Why? Because that is a federal possession, constitutionally guaranteed inside the state. It's a federal institution. We are a church institution residing in a state. That's why we don't pay taxes. Okay? That's why we're exempt from income tax. Churches are exempt from income tax because they're a separate jurisdiction. Okay? Now, how many years people have been talking about, oh gosh, we need to tax churches. We need to do this. We need to do that. Folks, if you understand sphere sovereignty, that's not the case. Now, remember, we looked at the four sovereignties. There's self. I govern myself. If I'm operating properly in a Christian manner, I'm reading the word, understanding the word, and applying the word to my life in a self-control situation. In other words, I know what God wants me to do. or I have an inkling, or I can determine it from his word. I know what he wants me to do. What do I do with it then? I control myself. Because I'm in control of myself, I'm also can be in control of the sovereignty of my family. Because my family has sovereignty. This is why in the Constitution it's protected that our property cannot be violated by the government. People cannot simply show up at your door and open it and walk in and look around. People in governmental authority, state or federal level. Because we are autonomous in up to a point. I cannot murder someone on my property. Why? Because A, it's an offense against at least two other jurisdictions. It's an offense against God, and it's offense against the state. I am not sovereign to that point. I am sovereign in, for instance, if I decide to change my oil and pour it down on the ground, dispose of it by pouring it on the ground, am I sovereign in that? And the answer is no. It's a bad idea. It's a really stupid idea to dispose of your oil that way by simply pouring it on the ground. Why? Well, I have a well here. That oil eventually will seep down into not just my well, but my neighbor's wells as well. And so if I contaminate their wells, I have violated their sovereignty. Now, when it comes to a situation where different sovereignties are violated by an action I might take on my own property, who steps in? Well, the local jurisdiction, the county, the township, the state. I think it's way outside the federal authority, but nonetheless, there are jurisdictions. Okay, what are the other? Okay, church jurisdiction. We just talked about the church. The church is an autonomous organization. Again, there are certain things we can't do. We can't blaspheme God. We can't do animal sacrifices and that kind of thing. Why? It's against it offends the state, and it actually offends God. So therefore the state can step in, the local governments can step in, those kinds of things. We've got self, family, church, and then civil authority, which we've already talked about, local jurisdiction, the township, your county, your state, the federal governances. It's important to remember these things. And when someone, like I said, from the state comes in and says, you have to close your church, you can't order me to do that. Now, we did voluntarily close our church, much to my chagrin, but I'm an elder, and I helped make the decision to do that. But we only closed for about 5 weeks, and we closed for 5 weeks. And at the end of the 5 weeks, I said, okay, we've been sold a bill of goods. We've been gaslighted. We need to open back up, which we did. Now, what did we do? We knew there would be people who would be very unhappy, who respect authority, the authority of the state and the word of the scientists. And by the way, don't get gaslighted by trust the science. Science is never unanimous, ever. But that being said, we knew those people wanted desperately to have church. So what did we do? We rigged up a way through electronic means to have a church service for those people who wanted to be fellowshipping with their fellow Christians as closely as possible. So we set up a broadcast, which we continue to run to this day at Providence Presbyterian Church. And we continue to run it to this day. And it does work out there. I mean, we don't get that many views, at least not during the day, but during the week, sometimes we'll get 20 views. Other people looking for a church, they look us up and that kind of thing. But that being said, it's about jurisdiction. The federal government could not anymore come in here and order us to close than they could kick my door in without a search warrant and look around my house to see if I was doing something that they might not necessarily like. There are safeguards and protections, at least in our form of government, okay? So we've looked at the fact that it's not just in health situations where we're lied to all the time. It's becoming more and more and more oppressive in the realm of, for instance, climate change. There are, I would be called a quote unquote climate skeptic. I don't doubt that there are changes to the climate. The climate changes all the time. The question is, why does the climate change all the time? And by change, I don't mean the change of seasons. I mean the climate itself. Patterns emerge. Things happen that'll run year after year after year, and then nothing happens. One of the biggest gaslights I've seen is, I've talked to somebody recently who was in an area of Florida. My mom had a little bit of this, but she was realistic about it. But this person said, we chose this place in Florida because it hadn't been hit by a hurricane in 30 years or something. And they just got devastated by Milton. Now, their home is fine, but their business, which is down in Zone A, they were in Zone C. They were up higher inland, and their house did fine. But their business downtown got pretty damaged. The roof was torn off, and it's a bookstore. So, you can't have the roof caving in on your books and the water come in. It's bad for books. And you don't want that to happen. So, but this person said, we chose this place in Florida. And she's the kind of person who instantly attempts to make it political, and that's another gaslighting. It's bad because Ron DeSantis caused the hurricane to come, and it's all his fault, and it's all the people who are climate deniers like me, climate deniers. Now, again, I say I don't deny change in climate. I deny that it's man-made. It's naturally made, but nonetheless, I said, okay, let me paint a scenario. You build your house on a railroad track. Okay? There hasn't been a train through here for 35 years. But the railroad track's still there. Oh, don't worry about it. There hasn't been a train here in 35 years. There's never going to be another train here. That's a foolish way of thinking. If the tracks are there, the railroads have not pulled them up for a reason. And this is where the analogy breaks down a little bit. But the fact is that 35 years later, suddenly they reactivate that line and whammo, your house that you built right there on the railroad tracks gets run through by a triple locomotive hauling heavy stuff right through your property, or through your house. If you build on a railroad track, you don't own the property. You get the point. It's a problem with thinking. My mom, I can remember when, there hadn't been a hurricane in West Palm Beach where she lived for over 30 years. I think 35, 37 years. She goes, I'm probably pretty safe. Well, what happens? I think like 5 hurricanes rolled through in a couple years. And I said, see, Mom, patterns change. And they change back and forth. I mean, because we don't know hurricane history, and we don't know history in general, we're hearing a lot of stuff now about how, see, global warming and climate change is causing these changes. Look at all these hurricanes running through one right after another. This is nothing new. This is absolutely nothing new. I looked up something having to do with hurricanes, and I remembered a couple of things from history. If you go down to Florida, a lot of things are named after Henry Flagler. Henry Flagler was a railroad tycoon who built railroads as far south as Key West. His big dream was to build this railroad to connect Key West by railroad. And we were talking about President Harry Truman had a place he called the Southern White House. The Southern White House was in Key West. And we were talking about, well, how'd they get down there? And I said, railroad. It wasn't all connected by ferry. It was connected by a railroad built by Flagler. And now what's interesting about that is that Flagler's railroad was used to save a lot of people during hurricanes. Hurricanes were coming. Flagler would send a locomotive down there with cars on it and load people up and get them out of there. Because some of the hurricanes that came in during that time were terrible. There was a really bad one in 1906. And there was another bad one in 1935, which actually destroyed Flagler's Railroad. And unfortunately, there were people down there building, if you've ever driven down there, A1A. It's the highway that goes from the tip of Florida down to Key West. And they were building that. And they were made up of veterans who were working for one of the 3C, maybe, Civilian Conservation Corps in the 30s. A locomotive with a bunch of cars attached were sent to down to pick these guys, these workers up, to rescue them from the oncoming hurricane, which people knew was coming. Remember that forecasting then in the 30s and before that in 1906 and before that, that was not particularly accurate. They had no idea. In fact, they didn't really have, we have category 1 through 5 for the strength. They had different designations back then, the great hurricanes, the extreme hurricanes, blah, blah, blah. But they didn't necessarily correspond to what we think of today in the categories. So a train was dispatched to pick these workers up. And these guys were veterans of World War One. And the train was headed back to the Florida mainland and was destroyed, knocked into the... in part into the completely knocked off the trestle, the bridges and things by the storm, killed all these guys, destroyed the actual railroad. I mean, destroyed the viaducts and things in the rail. And I don't think that railroad was ever rebuilt, called the Overseas Railway. It just goes to show you that powerful hurricanes are nothing new. They are not more powerful now than they ever have been. We've just gone through a period where the water's warmer in places than it was expected to be. That happens. This is why we get El Niños and La Niñas. You may be familiar with the terms. That's tends to be a Pacific thing. But water gets warm in the Atlantic. Remember, the Atlantic and the Gulf are much, much smaller bodies of water than the Pacific. If you can heat and cool the Pacific, which is just a gigantic body of water comparatively to the Atlantic. Well, that being said, okay, the water's warmer in the Atlantic. Listen. Is there gaslighting going on? Sure, there are people out there who are railing against climate change that don't know. I mean, I got into a conversation with a fellow online about this, and he goes, changing patterns, huh? He goes, this hurricane came all the way over from Africa. He was talking about Hurricane Irene. You don't realize that this started all the way in Africa. Yes, I do realize that, because they all start over there by Africa. That's where all hurricanes start. warm, dry wind blows off the western coast of Africa, hits the more moist air in the Atlantic, and it starts to spin up as a low-pressure system. That low-pressure system then moves either into the Atlantic. We've had, you may notice we went from Irene to Milton. Okay. That means there was a J, a K, and an L hurricane, or at least a tropical storm. And I know that, pretty sure that K and L were hurricanes. Where did they go? How come we didn't hear about them? They went up, they turned into a hurricane and turned north and went up the middle of the Atlantic and ended up causing rain and that kind of thing in like France and England. No big deal. I mean, by the time they had completely lost their guts up that high. But Milton came down, went by the Yucatan Peninsula, picked up steam in the Gulf, and same with Irene. They both picked up steam and around the Yucatan Peninsula, where the water's warm in the Gulf, and Irene, of course, headed to the northern, the Big Bend area of Florida, and came up the coast and caused the havoc that it caused, and Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, and Florida, obviously. Now, we've heard that this was a historic storm in North Carolina. Yeah, it was. But you may not know that the last time there was a big, same kind of problem. Now, it wasn't as big. I will grant you, was not as big in 1916. It was because two hurricanes merged over North Carolina and caused very similar flooding. Very similar flooding. Now, what's the difference between now and then? A, there weren't as many people in North Carolina then as there are now. B, this was had much more rain involved. There were places around Asheville, North Carolina that got 32 inches of rain. Well, that's unheard of. No place can survive over a couple of days. If we had 32 inches of rain here in central Ohio, it would wreak havoc here. Land would be washed away. Farms would be destroyed. Homes would be destroyed. We would have massive flooding. All the major rivers would be flooded. The Ohio would be flooded. Everything would be flooded. So can that happen? Yes, it does. But you know what we're not being told? I mean, we know that Irene was bad, and we know that Milton was bad as well. Now, Irene, in our case, was worse than Milton. Milton raced across Florida, and because Florida was very ready for it, it didn't have as much impact. Again, this comes from good authority that should be trusted, that should be believed in, that should be obeyed, versus bad authority that shouldn't be trusted, shouldn't be believed in, and shouldn't be obeyed. We have to be very discerning in that. This is when civil disobedience comes in. We were civilly disobedient by opening our church. We had been supposedly sort of semi-ordered not to do that in 2020, and we did it anyway. There was also enforcement of masking. We didn't do that either. If you wanted to wear one, wear one. If you didn't want to wear one, don't. That's what you have to discern whether, there are reasons scientifically that we didn't enforce the masking ban because masks didn't work against the virus. It's an absurdity. Okay, that being said, what if everybody had failed to trust, obey, and believe in their authorities in Florida when they said, you know, close up, get out, get ready, get away from the storm, what would have happened? The death toll would have been simply unbelievably higher. There are always people who refuse to leave. Why? Because they don't believe in, they don't obey, and they don't trust. Some people are just that way, period. They're to the point of being suicidal. But that being said, what do we know about hurricanes? Hurricanes tend to be worse. There are correlations, not necessarily causations, but I think a causative thing will be found at some point. Hurricanes tend to be worse near sunspot maximums. Sunspots running an 11-year cycle. La Nina and El Nino also follow the sunspot cycle, which affects weather everywhere. It affects dry periods in the west. It affects rainy periods in the north. It affects winters. Sunspot maximums affect winters. It affects summers, dryness. You'll notice this year we had a terrible drought, and we still have a terrible drought here. We still have burn bans here. Why? Because there are things going on with the weather that are related to the sun. Believe it or not, the weather, the primary cause of our weather is our sun. I know that's difficult to believe. There was a study done in 2008 that talked about this, published, I think, in Nature. And you're not seeing much into it because of political gaslighting. There are reasons why there are powerful people inside and outside science and inside and outside government want to talk about climate change in terms of man-made climate change. That is, we too much energy production. We're using too much energy. We, you know, stop using your air conditioners. Stop name things. Go to electric vehicles, forgetting the fact that it takes way more energy to create an electric vehicle and to recharge it than it does just to have a primary energy source in the form of gasoline or diesel. Much more efficient, much more usable, much more practical. And pushing the idea that somehow CO2 is a greenhouse gas. You know what the biggest greenhouse gas that we have is? We have greenhouse gases. You know what the biggest one is in the atmosphere right now, and there's nothing we can do about it? Water vapor. Water vapor is by far the worst greenhouse gas. What can we do about that? Nothing. We can't shut the sun off, and that's part of the issue. The more potent the sun is, the more water vapor is in the air, and the warmer the planet tends to get. Okay? We're going through a period right now where we are going through geomatic magnetic storms caused by solar storms. What does that mean? On October 10th, I'm recording this on October 11th, 2024, for the show on October 12th, 2024. What happened? There was a big solar storm that hit. We had a large coronal mass ejection. What that means is a huge number of particles at a very high temperature were ejected from the sun and hurtled toward Earth. It was pointed at us. And when that happens, we get things like large outbreaks of northern lights. Now, in May, you were able to go out. Many of you went out and saw the northern lights. We don't get it very often here, but when we do, it's beautiful. My wife and I went out, and sadly, I hate to report to you, my wife couldn't see it. I don't know what it is about her vision, but I saw it, and I took pictures of it, and I showed them to her, and she goes, "Does it look like that to you?" I said, doesn't look this bright, but this is what it looks like. So I could see it, she couldn't, but I've seen, people have seen outbreaks that where it lights up the whole sky. What's that from? It's from solar storms and coronal mass ejections that are captured by the Earth's magnetic field, and the electrons that are captured are slowed and deprived of their energy, which then fluoresces and shows off as the northern lights. Well, that means that a lot of those particles are headed our way, that we're capturing a lot of those particles. There is weather involved. There is radio communications involved. You may find that your internet isn't working too well the last few days. There's a reason for that. That stuff does come through the magnetic field. If we didn't have the magnetic field, we would all be dead. Well, this is one of the reasons why it's a silly idea to think in terms of a colony on Mars. You can't do it because Mars does not have a magnetic field, and it does not have protection against the solar wind. We do here. We have that. And if we didn't have that, life would not be possible. This is how fragile we are here, and this is how little we can actually do to affect our weather, our survivability, all that stuff. We have to understand that we're being gaslighted on the idea that the sun has something to do with climate, and that it has something to do with hurricanes. It has a lot to do with hurricanes. A lot. So, I'm coming up quickly on my last couple of minutes, and I noticed solar storms and hurricanes and abortion. Well, what is abortion? You know, why am I talking about abortion with gaslighting? I've got an article here where Kamala Harris and we've seen it here as well. We've seen it in our local newspapers. A woman in Georgia died due to delayed care as a result of the state's abortion limits, supposedly, except it's been debunked. That's not true. The woman was simply not treated properly. And what did the doctors do? They tried to go back and do a defense based on Georgia's abortion law. It's absolute nonsense. We got sold this bill of goods. Remember the abortion amendment that was put in the Ohio Constitution last November? If you go back around October of last year, you will find that I explained that what they were telling you was going to happen if we didn't pass this thing was that women were going to drop dead because they wouldn't be allowed to have dilation and curettage, DNC, and other things. They wouldn't be allowed to remove infants who had died in utero. Absolute nonsense that they wouldn't be allowed to be properly treated for disease. You'd have to die and die with your infant rather than take a treatment that would kill your baby. That's not just simply not true. I debunked all that stuff, and yet here it is back in our face. Why? Because it's effective. Women are afraid that if abortion isn't allowed, somehow that it's going to mean that they themselves could die. No. Now, everybody who's involved in this thing, the far left, especially the pro-abortion advocates, know for a fact, that these laws allow the treatment of women. They allow treatments which will kill the baby to save the life of the mother. That is a fact. It's a sad fact, but it's a fact. I'm not sad. I'm sad that the baby would die, but I'm glad the mother would be saved. I'm sad over the fact that these kind of lies are told, that for the simple reason is these people want as many dead babies as they can get. I hate to put it any other way. There's no other reason why you wouldn't be for a law that allows children to live, infants to live, and their mothers to live. If the mother cannot survive the pregnancy and the baby can't survive the pregnancy, the mother can't survive without the baby out, then the baby can be taken out. Those instances are so rare. Tiny, tiny, tiny percentages. You would see the number of children murdered in this way drop to nothing. This is more about maintaining abortion as a convenience, not as a life-threatening or life-saving procedure. Because it very, very, very rarely is. Almost never. So, I'm out of time. I hate that. Maybe you hate that. Maybe you're glad. I don't know. let me know. Right now, the website is not working, but you can get a hold of me at chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And I would ask, since you know what I think and I know what you think, that you should join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.